Okay, well, I'm going to begin with a confession. I have a new condition. It's called fizzy brain syndrome. Actually, it's for those of you who know me, it's not at all new. I've certainly experienced it repeatedly since I arrived in our vibrant and challenging and exciting community. And I get it pretty much every time that I chat to anyone in about the readings, say in the sermon circle, which, quick plug, is still being held every week on Wednesday mornings. And if anyone would like the link, please email me or Caroline and we'll send the link to a Zoom sermon circle every Wednesday morning. Anyway, enough of the plugs. My brain has been fizzing with the content and the background to these readings, as well as with other things happening in the life of our community. And it doesn't seem to have stopped. So I actually had to write notes for this sermon, which has been something I haven't done for a couple of months, because I had so much to say. So I'm trying to narrow it down. Give me a little bit of leeway, please. I will try and keep it brief. I want to digress for a moment. Not that that will surprise anyone. You may think that in these COVID-19 times, days of self-isolation and physical distancing, there's not much for your ministry team to do. You know that we can't meet or hold services in our beloved church building. We can't go out visiting as we normally do. We can't get into hospitals or care homes and houses and apartments as we normally do. But don't be fooled. Your clergy and lay ministers are as busy as ever. And I could expand, but part of my editing was to take out that list of things that we're doing. But one thing I do want to say is that we are here for you, and we love to hear from you, even as we love to visit with you by phone or Zoom or whatever method. I've even actually stood on the end of someone's deck so I could say hello to them nearby here at their request. But that digression also leads me back to my fizzy brain. My Fitbit may think that my legs have fallen off, but the particular and peculiar experience of these times has certainly got mine and many others' heads and hearts working. And to return to the substance of what we have today in our readings, our lessons from Acts 2, 1 Peter 2, and John chapter 10, we come to this Sunday that we know, excuse me, as Good Shepherd Sunday. Out of all the readings we've had for today, the psalm has been for me a much needed calm in the storm of the readings. That 23rd psalm, being led into green pastures and laying beside still waters, has been my place to breathe and the chance to return to the familiar and the comforting and the reassuring. And I'm pretty sure I'm not alone in wanting that kind of place at these times. But I'm wandering like a sheep off the path again, and I want to get back to the other readings. I just want to pull some threads from the readings for today, and I can't guarantee I'll tie them all back up again, but I'm going to offer some food for thought to take away and do whatever you'd like with. But you know how it is as far as food for thought goes. Some of us seem to be eternally dieting, and others of us can't get enough. So we have this passage from Acts chapter 2, and there was something about this reading that linked all three of the readings for today for me. Previously, whenever I've opened this part of the book of the Acts of the Apostles, I've always zoomed in on that part of chapter 2 on what looks maybe like some kind of socialist utopia. Those first disciples, so aflame with their faith, had everything in common and were continually together. It seemed a wonderfully progressive and left-leaning basis on which to build community. And it still does offer us a model on how they felt called to live and work and be together. But there is more to it than that. These first disciples had a common life, but they also, we see in the passage today, had their own homes and their own lives apart from that early emerging Christian community. That's the problem with utopia. It doesn't exist. The early Christian community was a mix of passion and prayer, generosity, and real life living. If we're not careful when we encounter the scriptures and allow them to encounter us, we can engage in a kind of fantasy reading that prevents us from really being challenged where we are and making a difference. It distances us from the text. What we need to ask perhaps much more is, what is this saying to me, to us now? How does this example given by the early disciples challenge and or inspire me in my faith journey right here, right now? And for me, it asks the question, as we consider the long-term effects of this current pandemic, what does common life look like? What does it mean for our church buildings and premises, for our individuality and our community? This passage from Acts chapter 2 asks, what does it mean to live well together? Even if for the time being that means living apart or at least physically distanced from one another, how can we live together? What is there that's so important about physical gathering and being in the same space? Is it still important? I know I'm not the only one asking these questions. I know there are no easy answers. Theologians, ministers, and church members are asking these things too, about the possibilities of virtual communion, about how we equip and resource the church going into the new normal, about what we need to learn about not just being church, but about ourselves, our society, and our world. What are the implications for us as people of faith of this pandemic that we are experiencing? Will it change anything for us in the long term? Should it? But those brain-fizzing questions aside, there's actually something even more striking in the last few words of that reading from Acts chapter 2. And in verse 47, it reads, "And day by day, the Lord added a number those who were being saved." Now, being the liberal theologian I am, I kind of skipped over that for many years, this concept of being saved. The concept of salvation has been used by churches over centuries as the basis for an imperialist missionary mindset that exports colonizing culture with the excuse, well, we're converting the natives. We can destroy cultures and societies because we're bringing people Jesus. We can strip resources and exploit, enslave and kill indigenous people because in return, apparently, we save their souls. Which is why the word mission gets such a bad rap in contemporary thought. It's tied up with that kind of, quote, evangelism, which is ultimately its own kind of colonialism. It's tied up with the concept of salvation, which means we're saving you from being who you are in order that you can be who we think you should be. But as I've said before, to quote that great thinker, Inigo Montoya, I don't think that word means what you think it means. Salvation comes from the root salve, healing. In both the tradition of our Hebrew church forebears and in early church thinking, as well as throughout many strands of the church tradition, often hidden, it's about wholeness and fullness. It's why on this Good Shepherd Sunday, we hear the phrase again ambushing us at the end of the passage in John chapter 10. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. That phrase, abundant life, can also be translated as life in all its fullness or life to the full. It points towards wholeness and integrity, healing and integration. The kingdom, as we're often reminded in Jewish thinking, of shalom. The purpose of salvation is to bring healing, to be healed, to bring healing to others. Not that we dodge some kind of divine bullet or get pulled from a fiery pit, but that we move into being healed as people, as community, as society, as creation. Life in all its fullness. We have as a church used images of salvation as a way of excluding, of deciding who is in and who is out. In the same way that the image of the sheepfold in today's passage from John's Gospel has been one of creating a barrier between the church and the outside world. But the image of the sheepfold is meant to be one of embrace, of boundary, not barrier. It's about being enfolded in the love of the shepherd and graciously welcomed into the flock. And the sheepfold is an open place, not guarded in the sense of keeping people away, but curated for and cared for by the love of God. There's no gate, but there is the Christ who is the lover of all and who welcomes all. The image is not one of exclusion, but of relationship. It's of welcome. All are, without exception, are invited. God is always on our side, which to me links again with the third reading from 1 Peter, the image of God as the judge, the righteous judge, the God who judges justly. Again, that phrase has often been used to exclude. We think of judges as those who mete out punishment. Are we ready for judgment? Do we deserve to be saved? But the judge who punishes is not an image we'll see in Jewish tradition or even in indigenous culture. The purpose of a judge, the purpose of a judge is to bring about balance and healing within a community. In many indigenous communities, there is still the retention of the idea of the circle as the place of not judgment in the way we see it in the West, but of discernment. What brings health? What brings healing to the community? Those who judge, the elders and the wise, are those who are seeking to maintain wholeness and healing, even in the face of wrongdoing or the breakdown of relationship. And that's where we are, called to salvation, to opening ourselves to healing and wholeness, and being called to healing and wholeness for all creation. We move forward into the new normal. How do we as a church and as individuals bring that healing and wholeness? I could say much more, and often do, but I had to write these notes to try and constrain myself a little. I think we are left with one thing. How are we going to be community? How are we going to continue the real mission of God, Missio Dei, God reaching out with God's self in love, embracing in healing and wholeness the whole of creation? How do we live out the values of inclusion, welcome, openness and healing that we claim to espouse? How do we offer boundaries and a safe space as community, being welcoming without building barriers of judgment or exclusion? What are we being called to be, and what are we being called to do as we move forward with the Good Shepherd into a new normal? Amen.